You are listening to In Response, a legacy podcast. A show where three handsome guys talk about their favorite Magic the Gathering format, Legacy. This show is brought to you by QueerNessAtAnyCost.com and Austrian-Legacy.com. You can support the show at patreon.com/response_legacy. And now, lean back and enjoy.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 68, To Grieve or Not To Grieve, of
In Response,
a Legacy Podcast.
I'm Philipp Klein.
I am Daniel.
And I'm Peter Blank.
And we're talking about Legacy.
Most of the time. And now, in response to the media. This is the section of the show where we respond to current topics of the community. And today we have a very, very beautiful post for you from Brian Kowal, who finished now top 8 of the SCGCon 5K with basically the breakout deck of the latter month. He played Scaminator, blue-black, went undefeated in the Swift and lost the mirror in top 8, and his opponent lost in the finals to an unknown species of a legacy deck. So, yeah, Scaminator, is it the deal?
Probably. I mean, Black-Red Reanimator was here for, I think, the inception of Legacy, basically. Since Reanimator or Entomb was unbanned. And now, yeah, the deck went got slower.
Yeah.
And it's now or Black-Red Reanimator and Blue-Black Scam has pretty much merged into this one.
It's kind of as if two decks had a child, kind of. It's a fusion of two different strategies. I would say it's a more tempo deck than a reanimator deck because it doesn't go all in into I only want to reanimate my Archon, my Atraxa, whatever.
Yeah, they have only two targets. Yeah. I mean, two real
bombs.
Dedicated reanimation targets that you can't hardcast because Atraxa. Maybe you can hardcast an Archon of Cruelty, but that's.
To me, I guess it's impossible because
far-fetched,
because you only have like 4 UCs and 2 base. Oh, technically, I would say it's possible.
You have 7 or 10 mana if you count the wastelands.
10 mana producing lands if you count wastelands. So it's kind of possible to hardcast an Archon, but yeah, it's
not really. Yeah, unrealistic.
It's pretty unrealistic. Mm. And so, in this episode, we talk. More about Scaminator in particular. So, what are the advantages of Scaminator over blue-black scam? Over let's say, traditional blue-black scam? I mean, this deck was around for half a year and now it's something entirely different. And the advantages over the really traditional black-red reanimator that we don't see anywhere anymore.
I think we can start off a little bit with the comparison to blue-black scam, because those are more or less new decks in the grand scheme of things in Legacy. And the difference here is, like, in blue-black scam, you had, like, the Murktide Regents. You had, like, Sauron's Ransom cards were a little bit of card advantage, and Murktide was the big beater. Here we now changed up, like, the big beater in exchange for, like, Archon of Cruelty, Atraxa, Grand Unifier, and you have Entomb to enable those. So you give a little bit of your graveyard cards away, which was Murktide, which also used the graveyard to a bigger extent, I would say, and you basically power up your reanimates in game one. And an additional benefit of the deck is, if you look closely on the sideboard, we have, like, Dot the Voidwalker also played in Blue-Black Scam, and also the Murktide Regents in the sideboard to swap out Entombs and the reanimation targets to basically be Blue-Black Scam in the sideboard, and your opponent bought it in, like, a Surgical Attraction because you want to counter you're putting Entombed creature into the graveyard in response to reanimate. And now you completely juke the sideboard graveyard Tate especially the targeted one, and play a very, very good tempo deck in game 2 and 3.
Yeah. I think this kind of combination means that you have both advantages of the deck combined in one. Game one, you can be the fast reanimated deck that represents a really fast clock and a big threat. Obviously, Achon or Atraxa are bigger threats than just a Murktide Regent. And after sideboarding, you don't necessarily lose to a ley line to really strong hitting graveyard decks, which is a problem for red-black reanimated traditionally. And in the meantime, you can also use reanimate as a value card. You have your own grief, you can reanimate sometimes a simple Orcish Bowmaster if you need to, or reanimate something from your opponent, which makes the card overall a really nice glue that holds both strategies together. And yeah, these dedicated cards of Entomb and Animate Dead can be swapped out after sideboarding, as you said, Peter. Overall, I think it's a nice innovation that just uses and combines the strength of two different decks in the meta game. I'm, however, pretty sure that this kind of strategy is, let's say, using the current situation of Legacy, where we have an all-time low, well, not all-time, but current low of white-based removal in the format. And this deck really, yeah, utilizes this lack of removal and can use this as a benefit for themselves overall, I would say.
Yeah. And the second point that you asked, Phil, was like the differences to Black-Red Reanimator. It's now a blue deck. You have way more consistency. You have more counter in the form of Force of Will to dissect your opponent or hinder your opponent to go off or do something broken on turn 1, turn 2, which you were basically relying on your opponent to getting to the to your turn 1 to be able to unmask or forces your opponent.
But you still lack the raw speed. I mean, you lack the Grizzle Brands, you lack the lootings and the extreme hand disruption that Black Red had, yeah. This particular list or this particular archetype, Skeminator, has completely supplanted Black Red. Black Red is nowhere to be seen, and in my opinion, I don't think that's a clean shift. It's not a clean swap out. I think there's still a place for Black Red. You think it's these two archetypes simply can't coexist in the meta?
No. Yeah, I think they can exist for sure. I think overall it's just a matter of consistency because you have to expect graveyard hate, and especially when Grief, Reanimator, the scam package is, and Murktide is still pretty popular in the metagame. Graveyard hate is still really good right now, and I think even the presence of the Scaminate deck will incline people to use even more graveyard hate. I'm not sure if you want to shift more into the direction that you are more susceptible to that. If you want to, because I don't think the metagame now demands for decks that are fast. Well, like turn one-ish kind of games, which is kind of Black-Red Reanimator. This kind of strategy just uses really well the consistency in terms of Ponder Brainstorm and has the interaction of Daze, Force of Will and Wasteland. But It doesn't grind as well. However, it has the big impactful hitting cards that just finish the game when they're not answered, and they are not really answered efficiently at the moment. If you reanimate the Troll of Khazad-dûm, there's not really much answer at the moment, rather than, well, a couple of swords. But as I said, white is not really played at the moment. Leland Binding is also not really played at the moment. Man, like in a big number, and the advantage here is also that this kind of decks, yeah, it just doesn't lose to any Graveyard Hate right away. And I think this kind of Delver strategy that you can use to restrict your opponent in resources, while you can develop a fast and respectable clock in, but without any a big kind of hassle, let's say, or investment, is pretty big for this deck. And I'm not sure if this will be something that is too powerful overall. We don't know. But what we can see is that, at least for the online meta game, it is pretty, pretty popular at the moment.
It's definitely one of the most popular decks.
It's the most popular, according to MTG Goldfish.
Okay, so it has surpassed also Buck Beanstalk. I think in two or three episodes ago, we talked about Beanstalk is the most popular deck on Modo right now. Something has changed since then, because Poxwalkers or empty Warhammer 40k cards got finally added to Modo, and also Triumph of St. Catherine. Yes. Do you think this deck or has Catherine some game against Scaminator, or what can we do to fight Scaminator here? You already told us about Sorcerer's Plowshares. What can also be done for Graveyard Hate or something? Which strategy would you advise?
To give the troll answer, it would be Mono Black Helm.
Oh yeah. Well,
but the things that are really good against it is like a really disruptive early game, or, as Daniel mentioned, a very wide removal heavy game plan. For example, if we go like in Bunt Beanstalk with Catherine, where you have Swords of Plowshares and the Leland Bindings, you have a lot of removal that is really good against it, even though you can be griefed at turn one. But usually those kind of strategies do well against like reanimated type of strategies, even though nowadays with Days Backup, with the Wastelands, you have to be really careful with how you construct your mana base to not be basically wastelanded and dazed out of your game plan.
This is, I think, the point. I would agree that white-based removal like Leyland Binding would be one of the best additions, but you need at least two different... Well, you can get it at two lands to get it online, but this is really exploitable at the moment with Wasteland Daze. I don't know if this is a consistent plan against a tempo deck. It is. I think I would view this Reanimator, Rescaminator deck still as predominantly a tempo deck, because this is the main shell. And yeah, white-based removal is strong, but you know, when you think back in the day, usually one of the better decks against Delver, if you have a stable mana base like Miracles, which was just straight up blue-white, but you need some card advantage and engine to beat the rest of the format, like Beanstalk. What are you going to do against Beanstalk?
And one big thing that we kind of have to mention here, because like you said, like win condition and stuff like that. One thing with the reanimation targets here with the deck is like, it's Atraxa and Archon. I mean, both of those are hard-hitting creatures, but one big thing of those cards is they are value creatures. Atraxa comes in and you instantly gain like plus 5 cards in your hand most of the time, I would say. Archon basically removes a creature of your opponent, lets him discard a card, loses 3 life. You gain 3 life, you gain a card. It's like really insanely strong and every time when it attacks. So it's not only that they have a hard-hitting creature, but after you resolve the issue with the one card, you have like an uphill battle against the deck, because it's now a filled hand and this is a tempo deck. So it's like, if a tempo deck has additional resources, it is really hard to beat it, which means they have easy cards to pitch to grief. They have easy cards that they can basically loosen up with Force of Will. And yeah, it's a very, very strong strategy to play on.
Absolutely.
I think maybe you could try to circumvent this wasteland issue by playing the new Leyland of the Guild Pact in these 5 or 4 color piles.
How would you construct, or how would this deck look like?
Yeah, with 4 Leyland Binding and 4 Leyland of the Guild Pact for sure, and 4 Swords of Plowshares. I mean, that's pretty...
Maybe.
And also Beanstalk, maybe Kefren's.
And a sleeve up your arm.
Or so Scion of Draco to draw even more cards from Beanstalk. I think a deck like that, we already have seen iterations of it. Okay. I'm pretty sure that there isn't a definite list out there, and I'm not even 100% sure that this kind of deck is good against the rest of the meta, but it would have game against all these things that you said. It has a game against Wasteland, it has game against the reanimation targets, it has game against Bug Beanstalk due to being Beanstalk itself and drawing more cards like Beanstalk. Kefren is a strong hitting creature that gains a lot of life, so I think maybe something like that would be good to tackle the meta here.
It's an option to juke for, and maybe sometimes, well, you can go into the direction of kind of when you don't want to join them, you have to really try to defeat them and go on the high rolling train, kind of, because if you want to go in that direction, you kind of have to mulligan for this card. Mm. Otherwise, it's really not a really great card. I don't think it has been seen really exceptional play a little since it was legal in the Legacy format. And overall, Wasteland is, of course, always great. When you draw it later in turn 2, 3 or so, it's all also pretty strong. And Leyline is only good, really good, and in the starting hand. When we had this discussion before, if you had a listen in one of our latest episodes, you can hear us talking about more in that directions. But overall, I think, I don't know what the best counter to this deck would be, because I think this deck has really game against all decks.
Everything is like the blue the blue white Stoneblade of 2024.
At the moment, yeah.
I would say like one of the worst matchup this deck has is something like Moonstompy. It's like you have to have the Force of Will on turn 1 to answer the Chalice, the Blood Moon, for example, and stuff like that. I mean, you can get Troll of Khazad-dûm, get your Swamp and do something off of there, but something like Moonstompy that really puts the medal on the pedal or something like that on turn 1 and forces your opponent to have some answers is something that can do against it.
But
initiative is bad. But Moonstompy.
But what out of Moonstompy would you expect is a bomb against this deck that you want?
A Trinisphere. A Chalice of the Void.
A Chalice of the Void on 1.
Yeah.
Probably. Because you could still go Grief, animate that. You have 2 types of reanimation spells, for example, that just work. You have Ancient Tomb yourself. But you can't get Wasteland
at
all.
Griefed as a Blood Moon deck.
Or Troll or and animate that, for example.
Troll animate that. Could be a problem.
I think
that is a huge problem for decks like that. Yeah.
I think Stompy cannot really answer that. Not to say this will always happen, but like Moon Stompy is really effective when it really shuts off completely decks.
The mana base, yeah.
Yeah, the mana base. And if Chalice of One, I agree with you, Chalice of One is pretty strong against this deck because it shuts off upon the Brainstorm, Reanimate, Entomb, and really, Entomb. Yeah. However, Blood Moon, for example, I don't see it. I don't see Blood Moon being a problem for this deck, really. It has 4 Troll, it has the basics to fetch for, and you can operate with just 1 black mana. It's fine.
Yeah, the deck is so insanely black heavy, and Force of Will still does something with the blue cards in hand. So this deck for sure runs great on the single Swamp and Red Source. After Blood Moon.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, like the really big black count, we have Brian Cobble's list here. The blue count
is extremely low.
Is 17? 19? 19 cards, including Atraxa and the one of Brazen Borrower.
It's like, the lower side, yeah.
It's and the Wail of Forgotten, the Wall of Forgotten.
Wail of Forgotten.
What's that?
It's a sorcery with Descent 8, so when 8 or more permanent cards in the graveyard, you can exile those, and if the cumulative CMC of those is greater than that. No, if 8 or...
Okay,
we have so many set releases. Okay, if there are 8 or more permanent cards in your graveyard, as you cast a spell, choose one or more instead. And you could choose one mode beforehand. And the modes are return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand. Target opponent discards a card. Look at the top 3 cards of your library. Put one of them in your hand and the rest into your graveyard.
I'm really surprised that this sees Legacy playmat. If it's enabled, it's pretty good, I would say, because you at least get a 2-for-1. Or it's a 3-for-1. If it's enabled, it's a 3-for-1, yeah. But beforehand, like for an individual effect, for 2 mana, it's pretty weak, I would say.
I mean, the bounce is kind of neat. You can bounce like in the Snaring Bridge. The lower mode is also kind of okay-ish, but one big thing that we currently discussed is it pitches to Force of Will and to Grief. And I think this is like one key thing in the card is like it's a modal card to be pitched. And the modes are kind of okay. And if you look at, for example, Archon is 8 CMC. So if you entomb for Archon on turn 1, you can Wail with all modes on the next turn.
No, you need 8
8
permanent cards. Not CMC.
Switch up because like in okay, it is excellent. There is an
Descent. You
mean how's the other
No, it was in the newer set where you can exile cards with CMC of those and
get
2 mana set releases.
So fetch lands, wasteland, animate deaths, anything, or trolls, griefs, anything that is in the graveyard counts as that. But you need 8, which is a pretty
essential.
Think of threshold, and you have to add 1 extra, and it has to be only permanent. So I think it's pretty hard to enable. For this reason, I get it's only a one-off, it's nice, and so on. I just think, I would probably just play a Sauron's Ransom.
Yeah, I wanted to say the same Sauron's Ransom, or even
a Baleful
something
Strix.
Like a Drown in the Lock is
maybe
playable in that case. Yeah, it depends. Do you want more grind potential with the Sauron's Ransom to refill your hand, or do you want a clean answer to graveyard strategies or in the mirror maybe or a counter?
Mm.
Like Drawn in the Lock, yeah.
One big thing, of course, that this deck also has drawn to them is just simple Bowmaster. It's good against any blue deck, any X1 deck, and it's very surprising sometimes, and we can see it in this list also, only adapts 3 Bowmasters with the 4th copy in the sideboard at the moment, which really shows that the meta is shifting and trying to dodge Bowmaster.
I think it's more that it wants to be like the aggressive reanimator deck in the first game and then moves to a slower reactive game in the second game.
Can be part of that as well, yeah. But thinking of the different decks in the format, I don't know, goblins and these kind of decks, depths, whatever.
Painter. I mean, against initiative it's fine, but yeah, it's kinda, yeah. Interesting that there are also a lot of decks out there. In the latest episode we discussed like two depth decks in the top 8, so it's there is a lot of stuff that can dodge the Orcish Bowmasters.
What do you think about the Dothy Voidwalkers in the sideboard?
Dothy is just such an incredible creature. It's so strong. It has game against almost everything, in my opinion, because I'm you know me, I'm the graveyard guy, and it's like I don't want to see a Dothy Voidwalker on my opponent's side.
Yeah, Dothy has so many utility usages. I mean, it's basically a 3-2 with horsemanship.
Horsemanship.
No, it's a 3-2 with shadow. It's basically attacks you every time. It's like a true name nemesis. And it also has like the graveyard anti-synergy for your opponent. And the one big thing is if you resolve some good spells on with it out, your opponent gets to copy those. And the only good card that you want to let into your graveyard if your opponent has a Doughty Voidwalk is like a fourth Erlingers, because X has always been zero. But yeah, it's kind of neat and values down at the value engine. Or a breakthrough.
Breakthrough would also be great. To
like the only cards.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. But yeah, Dorph is like the sweet spot, the 2-drop that you can drop in your tempo deck to distract your opponent, which doesn't use your graveyard.
It's also really, really good in the mirror and doesn't use the graveyard of your own.
Yeah.
So, which is important for this deck, obviously. I mean, this combined with Murktide, and well, Murktide, of course, uses the graveyard, but not...
To that extent.
Yeah, not like a targeted way. Like a surgical can really, I don't know, destroy your plan when you have an animate that and you want to reanimate your Aachen. But... yeah, for Murktide Regent, you can most of the time play around this kind of thing. Surgical, has never really stopped the Murktide. Also, something like Spell Bomb is something that Murktide doesn't really care about all that much, because you can, well, the opponent has to use it proactively, and otherwise you can just cast it and then.
Which is actually something that I have done a lot in the latter year. If I pass to my opponent in his draw step and he has like 5 cards in his graveyard, nuke the graveyard.
Yep.
The Murktide is a really big problem if it resolves.
A fast Murktide is 2 to 3 rounds and it's pretty much over.
Yeah, the problem with the fast Murktide is it's also always backed up by days. And in the earlier turns, this is like a big problem. Yeah, it's just a sweet deck. It's like, it's Tempo Reanimator. It's basically what Blue-Black Reanimator always wanted to be. I mean, Blue-Black Reanimator was always a little bit on the slower side, but yeah.
With cards like Careful Study and...
yeah, and you don't need Careful Study if you can basically fetch for your Undercity Series and... trigger in response, brainstorm, put your Archon of Cruelty in your break.
These are still a lot of hoops to go through to actually put something in the graveyard. But yeah, for sure it works. I think the real culprit here is just cycle troll, reanimate troll. It's just oftentimes such a good move and such a strong. A clock on your side that your opponent still has to deal with, and you have still everything else. You've got the Greaves, you got the Bowmasters, and you have still an Atraxa maybe to entomb for. So handle this troll, and now then we're talking. Mm-hmm. So it's like that actually.
Yeah, I'm just bumping out, reanimating this troll, and then chilling and defend it with Days, Force, Wasteland kind of thing. This is what's going on. But since you mentioned it, this surveillance is really surprising to me.
Yeah, there's some tricks you can do with them, but I'm pretty underwhelmed by them.
I don't like that it always enters the battlefield tapped. This is kind of the big issue. I think overall, when you think of Legacy, there's a lot of lands that have potential value but are just not playable because they enter the battlefield tapped. And just a simple surveil one trigger is now good enough?
No, the big thing is that it's fetchable.
Of course.
It's a one off in there, and it has some synergy with the deck, especially with like brainstorm. But yeah, it's like you have a lot of turns where you usually pass to your opponent, have the fetch land not be triggered. And end of turn, you can basically fetch for one. I mean, with those decks, with Scaminator, you maybe have like Troll to cycle for another Swamp in there. But if you have a land trap for the next turn and you don't want to reanimate your Troll on the next turn, you can just fetch for your sewers, and it's basically, yeah, it was not a big deal in there.
It's a free surveil that maybe adds up in the don't know next 200 games.
Yeah.
It wins you one, and yeah, it was free in there. I mean, it's basically instead of the 8 fetch land.
Free is really far fetched here because there are a lot of hands that you have to mull because there's one comes into play target all the comes into play tapped all the time land, and you have to weigh the pros and cons here. I'm pretty sure that we're trying it out now. It has some implications, but I'm pretty sure in 2 or 3 months we won't see any surveillance anymore in these kind of decks.
Yeah, but interesting.
I think I turn in and have to disagree because, like, we also have like another one of the Eternal Glory guys, top 8 in there, and he's not playing one. He's playing 2 surveil lands, and he's playing TS. It's Brian Cook. He also went top 8 at the 5K. He lost one round in Swiss to a guy named Brian Cowell. Maybe we talked about him today here. And he's playing 2 surveillance because the value that surveillance provide to him, because it does not really go off on turn 1, turn 2, is like immense. So it's like, yeah, the card has to be good.
We'll see how this is going. I think, yeah, it's interesting. If Legacy shifts into this, I mean, why not? I mean, I welcome this, to be honest. I think it's interesting and leads to more interesting gameplay overall.
Well, for sure. I mean, maybe the format comes to a very, very slow pace. I mean everything points in that direction. The decks get slower and slower and slower. And then sometimes a deck like Black Red Reanimator is the flavor of the month again and crashes everyone. I'm not a fan of Reanimator, but I can see it.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. I think this is a good ending here.
A nice wrap up here. So keep the meta open and even keep the innovations flowing so that we have more to talk about. So if you like what we are doing, consider following us on our social media. It's @response_legacy. You can find Peter on x.com
with the tag Unicorn Lord, but the O in the Lord is a 0. And before we go to Daniel, we want to thank our patrons, Moritz, Matt, and Gino. Thank you for supporting us. And if you want to join the elite group, head over to patreon.com/response_legacy. And
Daniel, as
Flame Apteration or something like that, where can we find you?
Pteramanda. Wait, @FlyingDelva on x.com.
And as always, you can find me @FinnickMG, PHINNIKMG.
In response, the end.
This was In Response, a Legacy podcast. If you enjoyed the ride, feel free to support the show by following, leaving a review, or subscribe on Patreon.com/response_legacy.